We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Wojcik. Joining me today is Mike McGlone, Senior Macro Strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence. How are you today, Mike?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Excellent to have you back, Mike. So, you know, you recently wrote about the commodity complex and its price trajectory as needing some combination of factors to actually see a bottom here. So what are some of those factors and how do they combine to form a bottom on commodity prices?
Well, historically, typically, you see bottoms in commodities after a decent lag of the first central bank easing. And I'll say the Fed, because they're all together at the moment, and a lot of central banks on the planet are itching to ease to follow China, most notably Europe, because they're all kind of tilting towards recession. Canada's one of them. And the lone shining star remains the U.S. and the U.S. stock market. So the way I see commodities for a typical bottom, you have to follow things about, you have to, typically you'll do what happened in natural gas. You have to get to that low price cure, which is a juxtaposition of the high price cure, which peaked around 2022. So I figured we'd go there eventually because we did talk about that a little pre-show. But what natural gas did is it dropped below its break-even cost. The price on the screens right now on Friday, March 15th, is the same as was when it was first traded. Actually, the closing price on the first day it was traded in April 1990 was 164, and right now it's 165. And yeah, I see that reaction. It's exactly unreal. So that's called severe deflationary forces, definitely for a producer. If you include how much PPI has gone up, how much the stock market's gone up, how much money supply has gone up since then, that's indicative of what typically happens in commodities. Human, we can create more with less every day. And natural gas, the number one measure of heat, electricity, and fertilizer in this country, has already done what it was supposed to do. So there's one commodity I look at. Well, it's probably not going to go much lower from these levels. Its average cost of production is around two. It's trading 165 now. That's million BTUs. And you just have, and now we've seen the anecdotal signs from energy forces like Chesapeake and some other ones, I'm sorry, the producers, that they're cutting back supply. It's just typically what's happened. So I think that's indicative of what's going to happen in all commodities. Corn got pretty close to that level and it's bounced for a seasonal thing. And the number one macro commodity that I think will go there, and I'm putting fill or kill on this, just on this next for this year. I've been calling for 50 WTI for, yes, people will tell me and remind me way too long, but it's going that way. And then the key fact is there's only one major commodity that's actually going up, and that's gold.
So is there any way to separate gold, you know, out of the commodity index? You know, do you look at it more as a precious metal? Is there anything, you know, different that you look at it, or is it just a commodity?
Well, it's not just a commodity. It's in the Bloomberg Commodity Index. It's actually the number one single component. And it's not like it has a practical purpose. I mean, yes, gold, the World Gold Council always reminds me it has about 10% of industrial demand. Well, look over at silver, that's well over 50% now. It's really the monetary metal. It demonetized silver. And the problem is right now, there's a little bit of demonetizing going on with gold from Bitcoin. It's just the way things are going. But the bottom line is, the way I look at gold, again, by the time this hits the tape, I'll be publishing my gold crosses outlook, and I'm just analyzing gold versus the stock market versus cryptos versus energy metals and agriculture. And it shows you what Milton Friedman opined decades ago, that inflation is a monetary phenomenon always. You compare agricultural prices to gold, energy prices to gold, most other metals prices to gold, they almost all go down over time. And I think that's accelerating. So the gateway I look at gold is it's a store value. You look at what's significant that's really happening this year is there's been a profound amount of ETF outflows. And something I was just starting to look on is since gold ETFs peaked, and that was right around this October 2020, total ETFs in gold have dropped 26%. Yet over that same time, the price of gold's up 14%. That's never happened. Now, we've had 20 years of history now since GLD was launched. It's never happened. And I've been inch. I've been pointing this out for quite a while. So that's a sign of divergent strength in the metal. So why is gold going up? Well, the deepest pockets on the planet, central banks, are buying gold. And the number one suspect, according to the World Gold Council, is China, not just the Chinese central bank, who can print fiat currency and buy the metal, but Chinese citizens. I mean, what, they have nothing else. Where else are they going to go? Not just Chinese citizens. Their stock market's collapsed. The property market's collapsing. They can't get access anywhere else, and they can buy gold. So to me, that's part of the, it can't say that anymore without really pointing out this paradigm shift in the world order. And that's, to me, is what really driving up gold. If you tilt back to the unlimited friendship between President Xi and President Putin, since then, the world shifted. That's I can't go to gold without pointing this out, but since then, that's when Xi tilted his country, China. I have to give complete respect to China's history, because one person tilted its country over to the creation of the four bad guys. That's gold, China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, the tilt now. And then also what's happened in the same time, you've had just recently the U.S. approved Bitcoin ETF. So there's that battle between the old guard, analog, tangible gold, and the new intangible digital asset. And I always look at it as diversification. So I'll end with this, Tom, just not to annoy you. A lot of your viewers and people have heard this from me before. I think it's very risky to be a holder or investor of gold anymore without some Bitcoin in that space, just as the world goes digital.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we've seen these outflows from the gold ETFs, I actually did an episode yesterday on that topic. But, you know, we're seeing these outflows, yet how does that compare to the inflows into these Bitcoin ETFs? Good. And has that taken a lot of this capital rotation away from gold?
Well, I'm glad you went there, because I do enjoy the comments from the World Gold Council and some of the people that I really enjoy. Particularly Joe Capitale, has had on a panel with him recently at the Mining and Money Conference in Miami, second annual. See that trend, little people going to Miami. There's no bias there. And he likes to point out, well, that money is not coming from gold to Bitcoin. Well, I let him stick with that opinion. My view is, the fact is, over 1 year basis, I just did a rough calculation recently, there's been $20 billion about flowing out of gold ETFs now. In ounces, like I said, the ounces are down 26%. Now that's dollars. And there's been almost up to by now, since the launch of these Bitcoin ETFs in the US, $9 billion of inflows. Now the significance of that is, I did not think there would be that much in the Bitcoin. I mean, I've been bullish Bitcoin forever, not, you know, with a little bit of fluctuation lately, but in the big picture. But that's a substantive, that is the biggest and shortest, biggest amount of inflows in an ETF new launch products ever. I mean, it's just set the new bar. And I don't know whatever's going to take this. So that's just how significant it is. Yeah, it's probably curtailing at some point. But at the same time, what's happening in this digital asset is, we have the new way to track it. People have been trying to do it for 10 years. And Winklevoss twins try to launch a gold ETF. Bitcoin ETF at least a decade ago. And at the same time, that supply for Bitcoin is going to be cut in April. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a perfect storm. But the way I look at it, I still see this asset is basically about the digital gold, about three times the volatility of regular gold and three times the volatility of the stock market. And to me, the key risk going forward is the U.S. stock market has a normal correction, which is way overdue. And gold's more likely to move higher in that environment. And my bottom line is, I don't think our Federal Reserve is going to ease, even though its price market's been priced for a lot of that, until the stock market tells them to by going down.
Mm-hmm. When we're looking at, let's say, another one of your crosses is, you were explaining a moment ago, with, let's say, the gold to silver price. Does this give us an indication of recession risk within the global economy as well?
Oh, completely. Gold silver cross is what, about 90? I can go look it up now. It's well below. I think the all-time high was around 20. Go ahead. What is it right now? I can look on screens, but
I think it's 85. I looked at it about 20
there you
minutes
go.
Ago.
Yeah. And I published that just a couple days ago, that gold versus all the metals is crushing. It's melting the metals. Mm-hmm. It's agriculture is melting versus gold, and energy has got no chance. Just humans create more energy every day, and we can't really create more gold. But the gold silver cross, yeah, that's a recession. It basically, gold and the whole commodity space is a clear recessionary trajectory. Mm-hmm. At the moment. So you look at gold on a 1 year basis, it's just year to date. I mean, but gold on 1 year basis is up like 20% or so. And most commodities are down. Certainly we've had a little pickup recently. Copper, but industrial metals are down. Metals are energy's picking up recently, but the overall bent, and certainly from a gold silver standpoint, is towards a global recession. And then it also makes sense, clear sense, like I mentioned earlier on. It's that paradigm shift that would happen with President Xi's unlimited friendship with President Putin. It's just, to me, still shocking that I think history is going to look back at and use some American vernacular and say, dude, what were you thinking? It's just shocking. I mean, the amount of get me out of there that I see from China is just amazing. And it should, because, like I said, it created this axis of five bad guys. It just solidified it. Mm-hmm. So from a silver standpoint, silver is much more of an industrial metal now. It's been demonetized by gold forever. It's stuck in that range between, 21 and 26, bumping up near the upper end, as it should be, because I think gold is pulling things up. But it's got the problem with, I think, with platinum and palladium and even copper, is if China is going to have a pretty deep recession, a depression, which I think they are, that country is completely dependent on fiscal monetary stimulus. It's way overdue for just a normal reversion of rapid economic growth. And what better way to trigger an implosion, or just a correction, a reversion of rapid economic growth, than to piss off your best customers by quasi supporting a war in their backyard? Come on, it's just seriously silly. But that's where things are. So as a strategist, I just have to point out where things are going. And silver stuck in with the industrial metals. Gold, by the way, and I like to end with this, the central banks aren't buying silver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another point that we touched on yesterday, because it just doesn't store enough value versus volume to be a reliable source or even an option for central banks to hold, right?
Well, to piggyback on that, it's also another way to look at it is when you have a growing global economic environment, typically usually have emerging markets and rest of the world doing well, which include China, and maybe their currency is doing better and dollar weakness. Silver outperforms that environment almost always a gold. We're not. Let's look at the tilt here. We're still tilting towards GDP estimate revisions heading lower for most of the world. Hopium that China will recover. Hopium that Canada and UK and most of Europe and Germany and Japan will recover. Yet only China started cutting rates, and even Japan might start hiking rates. So as far as cycles are concerned, it's not the right time to expect that. So I look at it as good luck. I just look at, by the end of this year, and we have this election in this country, I would love to be able to see that organic demand pool growth in the rest of the world. That would be benefiting for silver right now. The U.S. is the only shining star. And the way I really look at it, Tom, is the measure of the U.S. shining star is the U.S. stock market. It's the highest ever versus the rest of the world stock market values. Data is back 60 years on that. If you just measure it versus MSCI X U.S. index, just a little reversion in that, and the dominoes tumble. Deflationary dominoes, which is what I'm concerned about. And silver is much more in that camp with crude oil and copper. And that's what I really appreciated just publishing my gold versus everything else outlook, to just point out how it's not only the enduring metal, but it looks like it's at a stage right now is if we get what I think we're going to get this year, it's just a normal pendulum swing back from that. You know, remember a year ago it was completely recession in this country. And then it was complete soft landing. Well, we got that. Now, if you just tilt back a little bit, the stock market is coming back a little bit, which it always does. That's I'm worried about the iterations on the back of that.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think some of those consequences might be, Mike?
So here's my, let's predict the future. No risk at doing that. I suspect that this recession that everybody priced in, and then everybody priced out, will come back and tilt that way. Just the normal cycles of a rapid rate hike on the back of the biggest liquidity pump in history that's dumped. Now, we've already have that situation in most of the rest of the world, tilting towards recession. You just look at GDP revisions. They were above 3%. Now they just keep ticking down below 3%. Now it's global. And that's still with the hopium that China can do that 5% economic growth, despite what's happening with their property crisis, which was worse, basically about as bad or worse than Japan's at the peak. The stock market, which collapsed. Well, the good news about their stock market is when you get to the lowest level since S&P 500, since Mao was president, you got to have a tradable bounce. But my overall outlook is that risk assets will revert lower. Number one to watch is the S&P 500. And things like gold and U.S. Treasuries bonds will outperform. And that's one of those things that I would be delighted by the end of the year if it doesn't work out that way, but I cannot stop from pointing out the facts of how these things usually work. And now here's a key thing I also point out, and there's simple little stuff here too. We have simple measures of stuff that used to matter. We do have an inverted curve. Well, of course, it's been for a while. T-bills are about 5%, and as of today, that 10-year note's about 4.3%. Okay, so that used to matter. Okay, I guess it doesn't matter anymore. If you look at just the S&P 500 versus GDP, I like to take GDP, add two zeros, and you basically have had the S&P 500 on a, you know, like a ratio since 1927 or so. It's the highest since 1930 at the moment, so it's pretty expensive. And what I've heard from most other sources that it's in the 95th percentile of historically being somewhat expensive. Yeah. And you see that's in the environment. So prudent investors, and there's an alternative. Prudent investors can say, oh, I can lock in 5% or more in a T-bill. Thank you very much. And the key thing I'm worried about right now is we've already had a good year in S&P 500. As of the end of last week or the week before last week or just a few days ago, S&P 500 on the year was up, total return was up 8%. Now it's a little bit less as we tape. But that's a good year, and it's only March 15th. Okay. So I think what prudent investors are doing is saying thank you, even though we have this massive speculative rally. But here's the problem. So that's why I think what's going to happen. Risk-off assets will do better this year. Gold might be one of the best performing. And its key fact is gold, since the Fed first started tightening, so if you just take it, gold since the end of 2021, gold's up more than the S&P 500. Close to 20%, S&P 500 is closer to 15%, a total return. Okay, so it's beating, and the volatility is much less. Now, this year, it's not too far away. Gold's around 5%. So there's where I'm worried that what's going to happen is the U.S. Treasury yield about 4.3%. It's just going to follow Greece, which is about 3.3%, Canada, which is a three handle, China, which is a two handle, Germany, which is a two handle. I mean, see where I'm going there? It's just unstoppable. It'd be wonderful if the stock, U.S. stock market can lift all boats. Mm-hmm. So I'll end with this. One of the little, those are the big picture macro views. And then I go tilt down to some of the simple little micro things that I guess you could say got me out of the trading pits from Chicago and promoted to trade in the New York desk in the 90s. And that is, there's a little gap in the S&P 500 E-mini. It's down to 4,600. It's about 10% below these levels. Never left a weekly gap in the S&P 500. Usually you can do it for 6 months or so. And I just think the market's going to have some normal back and fill. We haven't had more than a 1.5% correction on a weekly basis since that bottom. And that's a very scary sign that people have forgotten. We got to get past the test. The test is going to be we have a normal 10% correction in S&P 500. How does everything react? Now, typically you hit bids on everything, right? But what's the difference is the last time that big picture happened was in 2008. I remember well, it was a very bullish gold because I was bearish everything else. It just took a while. Gold was bumping up around 1,000. It dropped to 700 and then resumed. It dropped 30%. But that was an all-time new high. Now we're at levels, okay, it's all-time new highs, but it's basically not too far from where it was 2-3 years ago when it first broke, touched 2,000. So gold's had a very good time correction. And I'll end with this. One thing that's happened this year is we have not had that normal correction in the S&P 500 since that low in October. Which means I think it's just sucking in all the week longs. And gold has had a correction. It had at least one dip below 2,000. I was kind of waiting for that. I thought it'd be harder. Flushed out the week longs. Bitcoin had that too. Went to 50,000, back down to 40,000, launched all those ETFs, and then went back up to all new highs. At least it had some of that correction. The thing is, for digital gold, it still trades at a much higher volatility than the analog gold and the S&P 500. Mm-hmm.
Mike, what do you think explains the fact that the U.S. didn't slip into recession last year? And does this risk become, you know, less or more as time goes on?
More. That's the problem. If you delay the volatility, delay the inevitable, as Jesse Livermore said, the great speculator said, markets will always do what they should. It's just a question of when. There's two main reasons. Number one reason was what is wrong with $1.6 trillion of GDP growth that cost $2.5 trillion, about that, of fiscal and deficit spending? It was about 6% or so on the gross basis, the most ever outside of a recession or war. Well, that's a problem. Okay, we're goosing the economy with deficit spending and the wealth effect. I mean, just to look around, the average home value in this country has doubled in 10 years. I'm in Miami, you see condos have doubled in less than that. People feel wealthy. And the stock market, you know, was able to recover. So people feel wealthy. And to me, those are the key facts that I'm afraid of the inevitable will be happening. And the more you delay it, the higher you go, the worse it's going to be. And that's where I'm really worried about this breakout that's kind of sucking everybody into risk assets. It's going to stop them out. And I sure hope it doesn't. But that's why I said it's not profound to say we haven't had a 10% correction in the S&P 500 in a while. And it's not profound to expect that to happen and to see how markets react. And that's where I think that's going to be the big test. Mm-hmm. And I expect gold and treasury bonds to come out ahead. So it's, to me, the key fact is it's very kind of, it's almost silly to expect the Fed to ease with inflation about double their targets and ticking up lately, which I think is just falling intangible assets or stock market and the wealth of it going higher. And with this, you know, this massive speculation in the highest prices ever in cryptos in the stock market, it's silly to ease in that environment. It's just too risky, mm-hmm. particularly when their mantra is to avoid the inflation we got by easing too much. So to me, that's the lose-lose. The market, I don't think the Fed's going to ease until the market tells them. Market's got to go down to do that. And that's just my views. Hopefully we get out of this, but it's showing up every single time the stock market makes new highs. I love to watch Fed fund futures in 1 year, whether they're predicting for cuts. It's down around still at 100 basis points. And so here, I'll end with this. The first time in this cycle that Fed fund futures in 1 year started pricing for 100 basis points in 1 year was at the start of 2023. And the Fed hiked 100 basis points in 2023. Oops. So markets have been wrong there. Mm-hmm. And they're still wrong. Mm-hmm. The expectations for easing.
Mike, do you think that the total effects from the rate hiking cycle have yet to be felt for, let's say, another quarter or two?
No, that's the key thing to remember is the long and variable lags. Mm-hmm. It was only Q3 last year that we had our last hike. And it was global. And I think it's early days. I look at things. So the key things I like to watch is I'm a commodity guy. So let's look at diesel demand in this country. It's dropped to the same level as it was first reached in 2015. That's almost 10 years. It's never happened. Now, yes, I have to admit my data is only 30 years on that. So diesel demand, I mean, it's the grease of the economy is dropping. Corrugated box demand, you know, every time you order something from Amazon, it comes in a box. That's dropping at a higher velocity than it did during the Great Recession. In fact, levels that are well below the levels there in 2019, the stuff that doesn't matter anymore, I'm really concerned about. Leading indicators, yes, they've been negative at 7% or so for almost a year. That's a 100-year track record. It's always worked. But everybody tells me it's different time. It is, and it should be different because of how we got here. Remember, about 4 years ago, when there was a risk that we were all going to die, we pumped up liquidity to the greatest liquidity pump in history, bar none. The only comparison I like to go back and compare was to the 1920s, the late 20s in the U.S., and then we all saw what happened. And you know how that ended? It ended with the debasing of the currency. We took, you know, that we just confiscated the gold and said, well, sorry, we're not going to give you $20 an ounce, and it's worth $35 an ounce. A couple months later. So that bottomed everything. I hope we're not going to go there. But the point is right now, I like to use this. The world, there's a completely almost exceptional, inordinate burden that the U.S. stock market has to keep going up just for things to stable. But just as it's normal pullback and correction, to me, that's a great test. I'm waiting to see how we get through that. And I think the wonderful thing for investors is there's alternatives. T-bills, 5% lock in for a year. And for traders and from the more tactical oriented, these are tremendous environments. And right now, volatility is exceptionally low. So I forgot to mention the VIX. If you take the VIX volatility index minus T-bill rate, that average, like the last 20, 30 weeks, is the lowest since 2006. That's when I first started getting signals that we're going to have some volatility reversion and we got the great financial crisis.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's so many different indicators that show that there is trouble on the horizon, that people that are still throwing money hand over fist at this market really need to be paying attention to. But Mike, you mentioned a moment ago this yield curve inversion. This seems to be a really tested and reliable metric for predicting recession. So is this indicator now broken, or why do you think it hasn't worked over the last, let's say, year?
I put it in my stuff that doesn't matter anymore file.
And which means why is that?
Yeah, well, I'm kidding. I'm being rhetorical. It will. It will. It's just, let's never underestimate human nature and cycles. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like to point out but there's a great alternative. Sure, okay, you didn't make 20% over the last 12 months, but you might be able to grow your hair back. I'm speaking for myself. And you're locking in 5% in T-bills. We haven't been able to, it's been two decades since you've been able to do that. And so I think that's what happens is also let's put it this way. When we look back from the future, and if we go back to this period of the longest period in history of zero or negative interest rates, which pumped up liquid, which does what it's supposed to do, pumped up risk assets. If we don't have any type of normal reversion from that, it would be the first time in history, and it would mean we're just going to keep doing it until something happens. So that's what I'm worried about. And it's already happened in China. To me, that's the key thing to point out is China is just doing normal reversion. Like I mentioned earlier, that Hang Seng is at the lowest level versus S&P 500 since when Chairman Mao was president. So we've had that. We've seen a pretty severe depression kicking in there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just reads what's happening there is reading like Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged. I just read the book called The Party. I think McGregor was the author and read to me just exactly like that book. So it's happening in the second largest economy. It's happening in most of the rest of the world. And again, it's the U.S. just hanging in a shining star. I just don't know how much longer it can last. U.S. exceptionalism is getting pretty extreme. And I just like to point out the valuation of the S&P 500 on a relative to GDP, it's the highest in the 30s, and relative to the rest of the world stocks is the highest ever. So trend's your friend. You got to ride that trend. I'm not saying short it, but there's times to be overweight and underweight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mike, how do markets typically react to presidential elections? We know that the markets hate uncertainty. So how do you expect the volatility of the election, especially since it's such a polarizing one, to affect the markets?
That's the best question. I really enjoyed asking that. I led a panel at the Greenwich Economic Forum on the 14th. And at least everybody concerned said we don't really know what's going to happen so much to portfolios. It looks like at the stage right now that we're going to have a Trump 2.0. And definitively what's going to happen to markets, I think most people are just upset they're going to have to deal with this person who's just not that pleasant for another 4 years. But for markets, I think the key things I feel strongly about is drill at will means energy prices will decline. Curious what's going to happen to the dollar. And the key thing I'm worried about is more tax cuts and deficit spending, which is good for gold. And it's probably certain he'll bash the Fed, just put a lot of pressure on Chairman Powell to ease, which at some point is going to be appropriate. And the number one thing that matters is the number one factor is what the stock market does. I mean, it drives everything more so than ever. And when people dispute that, I'm like, okay, give me a decent 20% correction that stays down and the Fed doesn't ease. There's a significant test. And we haven't had that. It's been decades. I mean, just look at an example of the 1987 crash. The Fed eased that day. So we're at the point now with what happened in this environment is for the first time in history and for the most significant period, interest rates went up on the elevator. And the risk is they used to go up on the elevator and down on the escalator, or down on the elevator, up on the escalator. Now it looks like they might be going down on the escalator very slow. And I think what's going to happen, my expectation is the next few years, we're going to get this normal, slow economic growth environment, deflationary environment, which has already happened in commodities. The average of PPIs in the top four countries of the world, the US, China, Japan, and Germany is around minus 2%. It's a little bit higher now. It's picked up in the US. But we're going to get that. And I think the Fed's just going to take their time easing. And here's one key thing. That's the lessons of easing too much and the biggest inflation in a lifetime. As Jeff Booth says, right, the guy who wrote The Price of Tomorrow, humans are just about a series of error corrections. And that was an error. We eased way too much. And they're not going to do. We created way too much liquidity. And the pain of that inflation has hurt the small people, or the lower incomes the most. Mm-hmm. And they vote. So I don't know if I don't think we're going to be going down that road again for a long time. So that's why I'm worried that we're due for the big test. And that is to see if the Fed will actually be easing. And with inflation taking up and stock markets an all-time high, that's an environment to ease. That's silly to even consider easing in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, but I totally agree. This is not the environment that you expect them to be easing until, as you say, they get tested. But Mike, yeah, as you talk about this deflationary impulse in the commodities index, if that is the raw cost into all of our goods, what is driving inflation at this point?
Oh, well, it's mostly services. The key thing is we had an unprecedented event of money pumping. So it's the measures, the core measures that the Fed really watches, with things like owner's equivalent rent and stuff. And there's also a fact that inflation is a direct connection with financial assets, intangible assets. A book I enjoyed reading recently was called Capitalism Without Capital. And this is much more of an intangible, the difference between intangible assets and tangible assets is much more of an intangible asset market, particularly in this country versus China. And that's lifting inflation, the wealth effect. And still, I think it's still the trickling down from all that money pumping. But we've had severe deflationary forces in commodities. I like to point out versus gold, virtually all commodities have gone down over time. You can look at like agriculture prices clearly going down. I think that the measure I used was since 1991, when the Bloomberg Agriculture Spot Index was published, which is mostly grains, it's up about 250%. It seems a lot. Money supply is up about 600%. And in terms of gold, agriculture prices are down about 40%. That's deflation. It depends how you measure it. Remember, monetary phenomenon, always just printing dollars. And there's where these things like gold and Bitcoin are making the world a different place. Mm-hmm.
So in that environment, Mike, if we, you know, return to some kind of quantitative easing, whether that is explicit or not, whether it is monetary or fiscal in nature, what does that mean for the longer term picture for the dollar as you see it?
Yes. Well, there you go. It's first of all, that's how you measure the dollar. So if we talk to the dollar versus a basket of other currencies, it's unstoppable at the moment. Yes, there's a deficit issue, but who's better? Let's look at the top four. China, deficit GDP is around 300%, as I've heard from Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan types. Mm-hmm. Japan, around 300%. Then there's Germany. They got a little problem. They're in a severe recession. They got to export to China. Can't do it anymore. And then there's India. I mean, okay. So you measure the dollar versus a basket of fiat currencies, it's unstoppable. And by the way, you get 5%. You mentioned, look at the other top. Even in Greece, you're only getting 3% in a 10-year note. I mean, it's just the highest rates. You get that return. You get the protection of the military. And sure, you get the open discourse. That's the key difference. But when you measure the dollar versus gold, the dollar should go down. You measure the dollar versus the stock market, the dollar's been going down over time. You measure the dollar versus oil, oil's been going down or flat. So to me, it's a key thing what you measure it against. Bitcoin and gold, I think, will outperform the dollar. But the dollar versus the basket of currencies, imagine what it's going to take for that to go down. And that's what really scares me. Overlay the U.S. stock market with the rest of the world over the last 10, 15 years. It's almost a direct connection with the dollar. See the problem there? Takes basically, you have to have that stock market go down, which gives people the less desire to invest in the U.S. and the dollar, which is lose-lose for everything. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the bottom line. When people poo-poo the dollar, I'm like, okay, give me an option. And okay, gold. We've seen that, you know, like China and some other countries trying to use gold as the base currency, but it's hard to transact. And by the way, it's been replaced by Bitcoin. So, but the bottom line also remember is I love what Jamie Dimon said when he pointed out when the U.S. was downgraded last year, mm-hmm. only countries that had higher rating were under the umbrella of the U.S. military and NATO. And I have a son who's a captain in the army, and they should just say thank you because they're not coming over here to help us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's always the cleanest dirty shirt, and it's also has the deepest liquidity and easiest ease of transaction, right?
Well, it's one thing. I'm glad you went there. It's one thing I've enjoyed since being in the trading pits in the 80s. The deficit's increasing. Everyone's going to sell their treasuries and yields are going to go up. Every single time I've heard that, it's been a buying opportunity. Of course, I'm open, you know, it's only 2024. It's been almost 40 years. Okay, where are you going to go? Yeah, go buy JGBs. You can buy some yuan bonds, maybe buy some Greek bonds. It's just, there's nothing even close. But I think it's so important also to remember, look at on a map. And okay, US and Canada and down to Mexico, and it's just a pretty solid trading block that's unstoppable. Sea to shining sea, entire continent. There's nothing even close. Mm-hmm. And it's the bottom line, I think, is the open discourse. It'll be a problem until we beat ourselves up and figure it out. As Churchill said, we'll always come to the right conclusion. But you got to go through these little volatility periods sometimes.
Yeah. We'll come to the right conclusion after we've exhausted every other possible option, right?
You got it. But that's the thing. Right now in China, it's one person guiding everything. One person. I feel so bad for the whole country and the history and in the future. And because, like I said, it just, you can see where that tilt is going. And same in Russia, it's one person. At least in this country, we have open discourse.
Mm-hmm. Mike, there's something I was thinking about as we were talking here, and that's this idea that the East is really driving gold at this point, versus all of these indicators that would traditionally mean that gold would be sliding. You know, let's just look at the face of gold prices in the face of real yields, right? So what do you think takes us to the point that the West starts to drive gold price along with the East? Is it more fear in the markets? Is it another type of financial event? Is it some type of fear event? Do we need some type of catalyst like that from the West? Yeah.
Stock market to stop going up. That simple, I think, there's no incentive and no reason in this country and most of the West to purchase gold ETFs, which is the number one way investors do now, when the stock market's on a tear and you can get 5% in T-bills. And you're seeing that happening. I mean, you got to perform. If you don't perform in the stock market, you get fired. Once that changes, and I didn't say if, those outflows will flip to inflows. That to me is the catalyst I'm waiting for. And that to me is why the big test is going to be just getting that first drawdown in the S&P 500. Now, if it keeps going up forever, okay, it's never going to happen, but okay, good luck. And everybody's better off. But from a prudent investment standpoint, to me, that's the trigger I'm waiting for. And that's why everything is predicated on this inordinate burden of U.S. stock market. It has to keep going up. And maybe it's finally reached that point with this latest PPI, which was weaker than expected, which was, you know, more than expected, partly because the stock market's going up. It's, and gold and crude oil's gone up. And CPI is going up because the stock market's going up. See the lose-lose there? Mm-hmm. And retail sales are weaker than expected. So to me, it's the early days of a significant turning in the ship, and it can't be easy. And like I said, but there's alternatives, and that is the bottom line is the T-bill. So for U.S. investors have to start giving up on the stock market. That's why I like to point out, with lower volatility, since the Fed first started tightening, which has gone since 2021, gold is actually outperforming the S&P 500. Most people don't know that. But I like to say it's the best way to, it depends on how you do it, but as a prudent investor, you just can't hold gold anymore without some Bitcoin in there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, returns have been much greater, but it's just a small amount. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there becomes a point when, as you said, we get a significant test for the U.S. stock market where gold's performance outshines the stock market returns and, you know, responsible, let's call them, fund managers have to start investing into gold because of that outperformance, whether they want to or not?
Unlikely. The have to in gold has been pushed back for decades. Mm-hmm. That's the key thing, is you reach some point in human nature and markets and that it's all equities. That might come, mm-hmm. but I think it's more, that's another bridge. I'm looking forward to that bridge might come one bridge at a time. The first bridge is to at least have some normal draw down back and fill in the stock market for typical type recession, which has already been priced out. We're not even near that first bridge yet. So that's a good question. I'd like to see how that happens. But typically gold is a very small portion of portfolios, as it should be, because it doesn't have a return. And it's that historical measure or benefit of compounding earnings. You get that in stock market. But the point is, at about 1.5 or so dividend yield, divided by the T-bill, that spread around 3.5% is the highest since 2001. I mean, or the lowest. I mean, you're just not, you get so much better in T-bills now versus that dividend yield in the S&P 500. So that's stuff that used to matter, mm-hmm. you know, but it's going to. It's a question of when.
Yeah. This reversion to the mean, I think, is a major theme that we're going to see play out over the rest of this decade.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm worried about. It's going to seem so profound and so significant, and it's that simple. 1987 crash was a reversion to mean. The significance is back then, the S&P 500 was well below GDP, was a decent discount, and to gold. Now it's the opposite. It's a very high, if you look at the price of gold. Just take one thing I love doing, I publish a lot, is you take the price of gold in ounces and overlay with the S&P 500 on the same chart. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a decent connection, and every time we go into recession and S&P 500 is this high to gold, they just kind of convert, which is around 3,000. that would seem horrible, but that's just how life has worked. It just how human nature is. You forget what happens in normalization. What's happening in China, just normal reversion. That to me is, I think, what happened in natural gas, normal reversion. What happened in crude oil, normal reversion. The only markets going up and sustain that in commodities is gold, sustaining higher prices.
And again, I think that idea kind of comes back to, especially over time, that growth of the money supply.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, and it's how you measure money supply. We've been using M2, but it's right there now. It's actually been declining. But the pump from the end of 2019 of 40% to that peak around 2022, everything had to go up 40%. If it didn't, it was underperforming. Everything did, just about everything. And now it's starting to trickle down, but it's the lessons of two books. Boom and Bust, Quinn, I think, was one of the authors. The other book was The Price of Time. I forget the author for that. But just the simple lessons of that are so logical and so normal economic that when you have such periods of low liquidity and not sorry, high liquidity, massive, lots of liquidity, I would say, and low interest rates, risk assets get too expensive. And then they typically always just the pendulum swings back to getting too cheap. Like I said, natural gas has been a leader for that. And here's the way I like to and point it out is in commodities, they have the high price cure. That's what really kicked in when prices got too high, brought on a supply, crushed demand, and here we are. Now that high price cure is kicking in the stock market right now. Every time the stock S&P 500 makes new highs, all that easing that price is priced in comes out. So I think the high price cure is starting to kick in the stock market.
Excellent. All right, Mike. Well, that's all I have for you today. Is there anything else you'd like to mention as we wrap up here?
No, Tom, that was great. It's good touching base with you. And I love being on the same monitor with you. I have to get the same look because I feel like we're kind of bookends. And I hope our viewers and listeners appreciate the content. And I do appreciate the interviews with you. So thank you.
I really appreciate your time and getting to dig through your work and see your perspective as well, Mike. And I really appreciate you coming back on. For those that want more of Mike's work, excellent Twitter follow at Mike McGlone 11, MCGLONE11. Mike, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.